listening to Tamar Yonah. This is the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And we are going to be talking about a lot of things that have been happening over the last few days here in Israel, especially with the security situation. We're going to be talking about Iran and its threats against Israel, and not just Israel, but Jews around the world. They say that they may strike at different targets around the world as well. So we kind of know this isn't only about Israel. This is anti-Semitic to attack innocent Jews around the world who have nothing to do with coming to Israel, fighting for Israel, living in Israel. But we're going to talk more about that later on. I want to introduce our guest. We have joining us Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. He is a researcher, former lecturer at Ben-Gurion University. He has authored over 90 books and 400 research papers on science, history, and more. He commentates on Mideast and world issues. And I want to welcome you to the show, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
Hi there.
Okay, let me just try to fix the mics. Why don't you start talking? I'm going to try to fix the mic levels. And again, I apologize to our listeners. One of our computers is down. We had a switch over like a MacGyver style. If anybody wants to donate to the station to help us be able to purchase another computer, it would be very much appreciated. And we're still running on Windows 7, I think, on one of these computers, so we can upgrade a bit. You can go to our donate page, and that's on our website at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. There is a green button there that says donate. There's also another button there that says partner with us on the menu. Go there, and you can help us be able to deliver our programs to you much better by helping to support the station. All right, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. In the meantime, Iran has been making a lot of noise, and they have been saying that they are going to make a hit against Israel in an upcoming attack. We don't know when that's going to be. They were screaming and yelling that on Friday, which was a couple of days ago, that the Israelis are going to go through hell. This was the last Friday of the Ramadan holiday that Islam celebrates. And so a lot of us took this very seriously, as we should. When someone says they want to kill you, you have to believe them. And so people were getting ready, and the Home Front Command is coming out with instructions on how to protect yourself, what supplies you may need, that if we are attacked by Iran and or its proxies, they could hit our infrastructure, meaning that we won't have electricity, we may not have water, it may be time until emergency for help agencies can get to us to help people. People should have enough in their home for their family for at least 3 days, et cetera, et cetera. What do you have to say about all of this?
Okay, first of all, let's just take a step back and make sure that everybody's aware of what the background of all this is. As everyone knows, the complaints against the security establishment in Israel was that we had intelligence failures on October 7th. And that showed a very nasty form of weakness on our part. So one of the things that the government has been doing over the last 6 months, and people should be aware that today is 6 months since this war began. 6 months in its entirety until now. So one of the things that the government has been doing and the security establishment has been doing has been, in a sense, I don't want to say it in a negative way, but sort of showing off our intelligence credentials. For instance, there was the elimination of Arori in Beirut, which was a very, very impressive intelligence coup, where we not only knew where this person was, but we were actually literally able to put a missile through his window and cause exactly zero harm to anyone else in the building. It was in an apartment building. So we actually took out one room exactly, no more than that. And to make a long story short, I'll jump forward a bit. We've done many, many actions like that over the past 6 months. taking out some very, very senior people. And a short time ago, there was a strike in Damascus at the building next door to the Iranian embassy in Damascus, which was officially an Iranian consulate. And we not only took out, assuming that we did it, this has not been confirmed, of course, but I'm making the same assumption that most news outlets have been discussing so since that happened. We not only took out the top Iranian general in Syria, who was doing all of the coordination between the various militias and proxies and whatever gangster groups that Iran has been forming and arming and training, such as Hezbollah and others. People should be aware that Hezbollah is in Lebanon, in Syria. Iran today has 17 militias, and in Iraq, Iran has 50 militias, 550 militias. And all of these militias are come under many various names and et cetera. I won't go into all that. But so we took out the Iranian general who was the coordinator and in charge of all of these groups. And not only that, but we took out all six of his command structure. In other words, we destroyed the entire Iranian command structure with one strike, with one missile. Now, to do that, the level of intelligence that's needed to do that is phenomenal. Remember, this is taking place inside of a building. There's a meeting going on. How did we know that this meeting was going on? How did we know who was going to be at this meeting? How did we pinpoint exactly where this missile strike should be? Exactly what I mean. Again, the specific room. We shot a missile was shot in through the window of the room. I don't know how it was done. That's not my field of expertise in that sense. But some sort of aerial vehicle, either a normal warplane or a UAV of some sort, whatever, stood off at some distance. I don't know the distance. It could have been as much as 100 or even 150 kilometer distance, and shot it specifically into the window of this room and took out all seven of these very not nice people.
Surgical strike.
Very, very surgical. But the point is, it's not just the strike itself. It's how do we know that at the specific exact time when all seven of these horrible people would be there at once? And Iran, of course, is livid. I mean, you know, at one strike, we destroyed their entire command structure. You know how long it takes to recreate that? It's very complex. It's not easy. This is a really difficult thing to do. Okay. So that's the background here. Iran is livid. They want to do something. They don't know what to do. On the one hand, I mean, it's easy to just say, the Iranian Ayatollah will say, okay, well, let's just shoot off some missiles against Israel, and we'll see what that happens. Well, you don't want to do that if you're Iran, because, first of all, we just showed them that we know exactly what they're doing, how, where, when, and by whom. So the first thing they need to think about, any specific Ayatollah or general or whatever, am I next? Because we know where you are. We know who's giving the orders. That's the level of intelligence that we've been showing. And again, this level of intelligence really, really matters. So that's the first thing. Iran, right now, they're livid, but at the same time, they're shaking. They're shaking right down there, very, very low below their bellies.
So what do you think is going to happen?
Okay, well, it's clear to me that they have to do something. It's clear to me that they
to
have
save
to
face.
Have some significant reaction.
Yeah, they want to save face.
Well, it's not just a matter of face. It's really much more than that. They need to show that they're actually functional, that they actually have the capabilities that they're claiming. It's much more than just a face-saving thing. They can control these militias because they claim that they're very, very, very strong. And so, you know, you're safe if you're on our side, then you're safe. Well, they're not. And that's what we keep on showing them. You know, we took out some extraordinary senior people. We've taken out more than 300 people from Hezbollah. Now, no American newspaper has published that. More than 300 people in Hezbollah, many of them in Lebanon, many of them were in Syria at the time. Over the last 6 months, 300 people. Again.
300 terrorists. Important to make that distinction.
I don't know the exact definition of terrorists. Have we taken out only, for instance, fighters, or have we taken out also command and control people, logistic people? I don't know the details. So I don't want to use terminology that might be misleading. Certainly, clearly many of them were actual terrorists, but many of them may have been other functions as well. Hezbollah is the world's largest purveyor of money laundering services for the drug trade. That's one of their primary. That from that alone, they make almost 30% of their yearly income on providing services to the various drug lords around the world. Hmm. So these are not nice people. These are people that want you dead, whoever you are. If you're listening to this, they want you dead.
You know, talking about that, and I want to apologize to the listeners because I've been scanning the news groups all over WhatsApp, social networks, networks, etc., and I don't have the source, but I do remember clearly reading that Iran gave a warning to the United States saying that stay out of our business and we'll stay out of yours, meaning they were saying that they will not attack America. In other words, if they attack Israel and America gets involved, America better watch out that they're going to attack America. So this is just something to give thought to our listeners in the United States to be prepared.
This was a statement made on X by one of the vice presidents or assistants to the president, something like that.
I'm glad that you have that source. Great. I'm glad that you have that for our listeners. All right. So and we read about we hear about this also in end of days type of literature from the sages, that they say that in the end, before the Messiah comes, that there's going to be a big war between the United States and Iran, and they're going to come and turn against Israel. And we're seeing the stage being set for this. It's just fascinating sitting here and watching history or the future set its roots down and start to happen. And the only thing that gives me personally a little bit of peace is that I know how the story ends. And anybody who reads the Bible knows how the story ends, that we are going to win. And the question is, at what price? That's the question. All right, go ahead.
Okay, I was speaking this morning with a friend of mine who lives in the land of the Englishman, but he himself is not English. He's a gentleman and a scholar, and he's rather well known, so I won't infer what his name is. And he asked me what my opinion was and where I think this is going, because there was a report, quote unquote report, by I think it was published by CBS, some American news outlet. I think it was CBS, I'm not certain, saying that U.S. intelligence has warned Israel that Iran is about to strike with a swarm of cruise missiles and UAVs and other things.
Right.
And my first reaction
drones.
Sorry?
Drones, right.
Well, yeah, that's what I said, UAVs, yeah. And my first reaction to him was, can he show me any instance when American intelligence in the Middle East has ever been right about anything ever? As far as I can recall, there is not even a single instance. American intelligence in the Middle East is less than poor, and it always has been.
All right. So.
So that was part of the conversation with him, and the conversation was actually quite long, and I'm shortening it, but This is a gentleman from this area, and he knows what he's talking about, and he's quite senior. And some of the things that we said are things that I cannot repeat on the air, but there are a lot of things going on right now, and people should be aware. The headlines is the present tension, quote-unquote, between Israel and Iran. But that is not the story. That's the headline of the story. This has reverberations, as you mentioned, Tamar. This has reverberations in Yemen with the Houthis. It has reverberations in Syria, in Iraq, with the plethora of militias that they have there, in Lebanon, in Jordan. People aren't aware of what's going on in Jordan, but the little kinglet there is in big trouble, and he's aware of it, and he's screaming and crying for Israel to continue to support him, because if we withdraw our support for 48 hours, he's dead. Remember, his family are considered by everyone there to be usurpers and interlopers. They're not from there. The Hashemite families have nothing to do with Jordan.
They came from Saudi Arabia, I understand.
Well, they came from Arabia before it was Saudi, yes.
And it was basically a payoff that the British did in order to pay a debt to the...
One of the results of some of the things that were going on during World War One was the Hashemite dynasty, which ruled most of Arabia at the time, was thrown out by Ibn Saud, which is why it became Saudi Arabia, Ibn Saud, Saudi Arabia. And they were thrown out, and then the English didn't know what to do. They had to use their terminology, and I apologize for this terminology, it's rather crass, extraneous kings. So what did they do? They installed one in Iraq, and they installed, who was Faisal, and they installed his brother in what they then created to be what they called Transjordan. That was in 1922 by Winston Churchill, where he basically stole 78% of the so-called British mandate that was supposedly, according to the League of Nations, supposed to be ours, and he gave it to this so-called extraneous king, who was Abdullah the First. So then there were the two brothers, Faisal and Abdullah. Faisal was...
We're getting off topic a little bit.
Abdullah was murdered a little bit less quickly.
Yeah. So let's get back to Iran and its threats. So Israel is preparing. I can tell people here on the home front that hospitals are preparing. The army is preparing. The citizenship is preparing for something. It's not panicky at all, but it's being very careful and being cautious.
Yes, it is. It's a very interesting process. I mean, even if you just look at intellectually, people are being told, okay, store some water. This is how you store it. A, B, and C. You don't do it. You do not do this and this and this. You do this, this and this and this, and you store some of these kinds of foods, and you store this, and all sorts of lists of things. And everything is then being done very methodically, very carefully, very thoughtfully. It's really a fascinating process. This is how a country really defends itself when it's threatened by somebody that, but basically a group of madmen. I mean, these people are not sane. And I don't even mean that in a derogatory sense. I mean that medically they're not sane. It's not, these are not the actions of people that are in any way functioning on a normal mat, on a normal plane.
Mordechai, I did not see the news story, but I heard someone talking that in... I think it's southeastern Iran, I'm not sure. There's already some of its citizenry rebelling against the government because they feel, because people should know that there is a people's revolution that exists that wants to see the mullahs out. And it does exist
okay,
in Iran.
It's much more complex. You're right, but it's much more complex than that.
But I just want to say this before you go into it, that they're doing this. Wait. I just want to say it because it's important. That they're doing this because they feel that because Iran is now preoccupied with Israel, that this is their chance. It's a good opportunity for them. Now go ahead. Take it.
Okay. There are four or five, nobody knows the exact number, active rebellious movements in Iran. One is the Baluchs, that's in the southeast. One is in the Arabs in the southwest. That's where most of Iran's oil is. Remember, Iran conquered that province, and it was not part of Iran originally. And these people that live there are not happy being ruled by the Persians. They despise the Persians, and the Persians despise them. And this hatred has been going on now for 1.5 millennia. There's a rebellion in the northwest of the Kurds, and et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of them. And the most interesting of them all is probably the rebellion of a group of Persians, primarily Persians, ethnic Persians, who live outside of Iran and are very strongly in favor of Israel.
All right. So we'll see what happens there. You know, we can see how God, just like in the Purim story that we just celebrated that holiday, turned everything around in basically in a moment. And here we can see that God can make it so that not one missile is fired on Israel, and that the people who want to see these mullahs out can take over and just flip everything around. So,
well, you know, the former crown prince of Iran, the son of the former ruler of Iran,
that
was thrown out.
Right.
He's very much in favor of Israel. He's visited here many, many times. He's a very nice person. He has made it very clear that he will refuse to be a ruler in the monarchical sense, but he will run for office if a democracy is formed. He's been very, very clear about that many, many times. And, of course, he's an ethnic Persian. And if you look at, again, this is never reported by American media, but if you look at demonstrations by expatriate Iranians in the United States, they fly Israeli flags. It's very common.
Yeah, we used to have relations with them before the Khomeinis came in.
I was almost there. I mean, I was supposed to, in February 1979, I was on my way to Tehran and literally got turned around at the last moment. Literally.
All right. Change of subject. This is an interesting story. Record number of immigrants to Israel since the outbreak of the war. This is from Arut Sheva. The Ministry of Immigration and Absorption notes a record in the number of immigrants who have arrived in Israel since the outbreak of the war. When they say arrived in Israel, they mean moving to Israel, changing their place of residence. Since the outbreak of the war, a total of 12,745 immigrants have immigrated, including about 8,300 from Russia, about 900 from the United States, and about 400 from France, and a similar number from Ukraine. By the way, I know there are many, many more Jews in the United States that are trying to make Aliyah, trying to move to Israel, but the bureaucracy is so slow on the side of both Israel and the United States because they have to get documents from the FBI to show that they have never committed a crime, and they have to get this document and this showing all of their legal statuses, etc., their marriage licenses, all sorts of things in order to submit to come. And I'm in groups of people, WhatsApp groups of people who are trying to make Aliyah, and they're saying how difficult it is. So if you think that you might like to make Aliyah, if you think you might like to move to Israel, already start the process now. It could take up to a year until you're approved, and then it's a lot of work to be done. It's not so easy. You can't just snap your fingers. And then write down this website. It's www.nbn, like November Boy November, .org.il. All right, go ahead, Mordechai.
I'm going to say something that's probably slightly irresponsible about that. I don't know exactly how things run today, but I'm just making a guess here. If you're a family, you should definitely do exactly what Tamar just said. But if you're young, say late teens, 17, 18, 19, get on an airplane and land here.
Yeah, just come. You can make Aliyah. You can change your status here as an immigrant here in Israel as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then you just do it. Don't talk about it. Don't debate it. Don't anything. Get on an airplane and do it. That is the easiest way to do it. If you're already a family, it's much more difficult. That's true. But if you're by yourself and you're young, get on an airplane. There's no problem. You know what? Get on a boat. I don't care.
And here's some interesting statistics, because today on Sunday, on the 7th of April, it is exactly now 6 months from October 7th, since the war started, since the Hamas broke the ceasefire with Israel and invaded the country and went on a rampage of murder and torture, etc., and kidnapping. In the Gaza Strip, the IDF announces that so far 12,000 terrorists have been eliminated, including 5 in the rank of Brigadier General, over 20 in the rank of General, and about 100 in the rank of platoon commanders. Since the beginning of the war, 4,600 terrorists have been interrogated, and some have been indicted as terrorists, and some who participated in the massacre on October 7th were also held. Those whose investigations either in the Gaza Strip or Israel show that they're not involved in terrorist activity are released back to the Strip. It is found that if there is reason to continue their possession in accordance with the Israeli law, they are brought to a judicial review before a judge. You see, Israel's doing everything by the book. And other statistics here that I can read to you, I'm just going to run through here because a lot of this is really for higher level. The IDF reveals that so far 32,000 targets have been attacked from the air, and that about 3,250 launchers and rockets have been captured and destroyed, and over 3,250 launchers and rockets have been captured and destroyed. And there have been 4,250 terrorist infrastructures destroyed. I want people to know that when they hear statistics that Israel has killed 30,000 Gazans, we're not talking Gazans. This is what they do. Let me tell you what they do. Just a second. Let me just get my notes back in front of me. What they do, the Gazans, is that they massively fabricate their casualty figures, and they include civilians, and they include all naturally occurring deaths during the period of the conflict. Do you understand what they're doing? Any civilian that dies because he had a heart attack, or any civilian that dies because he from diabetes or from COVID or from whatever, they're counting this as Israel killed them. And it's interesting that it's like no fighters have died. We've only killed civilians. But we have to remember also what a difficult war this is, that Israel is not fighting an army like France or even Russia or any other country that where they wear uniforms. The Hamas terrorists do not wear uniforms. They dress as civilians, they live among the civilians, and they fight among the civilians. And that is why they use them as human shields as well. And they'll kill their civilians if it is advantageous to them. Go ahead, Mordechai.
You should note there that many thousands of these deaths were killed by Hamas.
This is true.
In many cases, by thrown rockets that they shot at us and misfired. And they landed on the heads of their own citizens within the Gaza Strip. Many of them were shot by Hamas because they tried to do some absurd thing like get out of the way of fire. When we told them, you know, we knock on the roof, we tell them, get out of the way, we're coming. And so the Hamas shoots them.
Right.
Thousands of Arabs in the Gaza Strip, thousands, not hundreds, thousands, have been killed by Hamas, most of them intentionally.
And let me read you this. This also, the mainstream media duly accepts the figures that the Hamas gives out, yet the same Hamas people who know the precise number of Gazans killed, they say 3,960 so far, that's what they're claiming, they know the precise number of Gazans killed, they have no idea how many of the 134 Israeli kidnapped hostages whom they've been holding in extremely secure locations for over 5 months, it was 6 months now, are dead or alive? They know exactly how many. They claim to know how many Israel has eliminated, but they just don't know how many dead or alive hostages they have, kidnapped they have. Not a single mainstream media voices questions of this inconsistency in this knowledge about the deaths in Gaza. And I just want to say that this is from an article that actually a listener sent my way from the UK. It's called How the Gaza Fatality Numbers Are Faked. And that's from conservativewoman.co.uk. Very interesting article. And go ahead, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
I remind people that, you know, that there was, at the beginning of the war, there was this incident at some hospital in Gaza where they immediately started shouting that Israel had killed over 500 people at this hospital, and it turned out that the entire thing was a hoax. That's also part of that. 500 is also part of this 30,000. And we know that the entire thing was a hoax. And the hoax was well documented by some of the more responsible media, mostly from India. They tend to be more responsible than America. And they documented that it was indeed an entire hoax. Yet, even though they documented this was a hoax, they're still broadcasting the general numbers broadcast by the Gazan so-called health ministry. Because they're just too confusing for most journalists to actually drill down.
Now, since the beginning of the war on our side here in Israel, 604 IDF soldiers have been killed. I think it's more today. I think that number has gone up since today. Since the beginning of the invasion of Gaza, 260 soldiers have been killed. The number of casualties from operational accidents is 41. And half a year into the war, because again, it's exactly 6 months now, the cost of the war so far is 270 billion shekels. The cost of the war per day is about a quarter of a billion shekels. About 1.5 billion shekels is the cost of the direct damage to the Gaza border communities and the surrounding areas. I want to add in here that there are still people who cannot return home, and also, especially now in the north, many, many displaced homeless Israelis have been had to leave their homes. I shouldn't use the word homeless because they all are being taken care of and put up in facilities and even in hotels, but people need to get back home. You need to make a living. You need to take care of your farms, your animals, all these things that you have there. Kids have to go to school. All of this has been disrupted, and the economy is being hurt terribly, and people are not able to return home. We have displaced people, thousands and thousands of them. Go ahead, Mordechai.
About 80,000.
There you go. And here's one other. This is from Israel News on Telegram, a report that says that the president of Syria went on vacation, including his family members, following an assessment of the situation that an Iranian response to Israel is expected. The vacation, of course, is outside of Syria. So even the president of Syria is expecting this retaliation. It's of another attack against Israel, et cetera, et cetera. And we Israelis are expecting an imminent attack. It could happen any day. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
I'm going to make a guess here, just from my own way of looking at things. I would guess that we will not be seeing anything like what American intelligence predicted. We will not be seeing swarms of drones and cruise missiles and things coming at us from Iran.
Certainly hope not.
We'll probably be seeing, in my estimation, and again, this is a guess, just from my experience, we will not be seeing anything happening directly from Iran, because basically bullies are cowards. What we'll probably be seeing is something like what they did in Buenos Aires, three decades ago, when they blew up a community center and killed hundreds of Jews that had absolutely nothing to do with Israel. So that's the that's probably the direction that we will see things happening, or some sort of a combination, maybe a few extra missiles from the Houthis, or a few extra missiles. A few Houthis are almost totally irrelevant as far as Israel is concerned. They've just basically caused us certain problems with shipping through the Red Sea. But other than that, they're irrelevant. They can't really shoot at Israel. They don't have that range. But we'll probably see a few more missiles from this militia and that militia, this proxy, that proxy, and things like that. But the actual strike will be something much larger than just simply missiles, and it will be in some other direction.
Interestingly, here now also, the news reports are coming out today on Sunday, the 7th of April, that for the first time since the operation began 6 months ago exactly, all maneuvering forces have left Gaza. Remaining troops are now securing positions near the border for rest and preparation for Rafah. It's still questionable whether Israel is going to go into Rafah. We believe that's where a lot of the hostages are being held and a lot of the terrorists are holding up. At the same time that Israel is going out, guess what's happening? We're getting rocket fire once again from the Gaza Strip, from the terrorists in Gaza. So make of that what you like.
Well, one of the things that people need to understand is that these rockets are basically very, very primitive. I mean, they're large versions of what most of us did when we were children in high school or something like that, just playing around and making little experiments. They're just bigger and nastier than that, than those things. But they're just basically totally unguided, totally they're not even really artillery. They're just rockets that make noise and can harm people, but they don't do much. So what does a rocket launcher look like? A rocket launcher basically is a hole in the ground. They dig a hole, which is at an angle. They lay down the rocket in that hole, and they light the fuse, literally light the fuse. That's the way it works. What fuels these rockets? Mostly sugar. So when you're thinking about the concept of the aid to the Gazans, what are we talking about? If you give them sugar, they will use that to make rocket fuel. If you give them fertilizer, they'll use that to make the warhead. And et cetera, et cetera. I won't go on because I don't want to.
And these rockets are very deadly. Don't think of them like little fireworks when you were kids. They're deadly, these rockets.
No, I said they're much, much larger. We're talking about things that might weigh
larger.
200 kilos.
Right.
Well, that's the extreme.
Like around
most of them will usually weigh about several tens of kilos in warhead. Not more than that. But they can be much larger even.
And anyone who's seen pictures have seen these huge shrapnel pieces of it. In fact, I even have a video on YouTube showing what happened in the city of Ashkelon when it was shot at and a rocket exploded there. Tons of damage. Really, it's very interesting to see. If anybody wants a link to that video, you can write me, or if I remember, I'll put that on the page where the show is podcasted. All right. Anything else you want to talk about, Mordechai?
Not that I can think of at the moment. I don't know of any significant activity going on right now that needs to be looked at. I would mention one thing, though. Maybe people should be aware. As most people who listen to me are aware, I have a high rate of awareness of the precious metals markets. So just to let people know, again, about 40 months ago, I noticed that gold was trading at 1,550. This morning is trading at $2,330 per ounce. That's a big, big difference. Gold has shot up significantly. Silver has been mostly dormant, but has begun to go up as well.
I want to add another news story here that I did not talk about before we go, and that is the relationship between the United States and Israel since the Biden administration, unfortunately and sadly, has basically taken the side of Hamas, saying that Israel has to feed and fuel its enemies. It has to let in more food. I mean, have you ever seen anything like this in any other war where he is saying that we are responsible for the safety of the enemy population? It's madness. It's absolute madness. And he says, and if we don't do this, they're going to re-examine their stance on Gaza, meaning that they're taking the side of the Hamas. But you can already see that they're taking, the Biden administration is taking the side of the Hamas by keeping them alive.
Tamar, it's more than unreasonable. Again, one of the basic foodstuffs, quote unquote, that we're supplying them is sugar, which is what's used to fuel the rockets.
Interesting.
We're giving them rocket fuel.
And
we're giving them explosives that they're using against us. And all of this, not only us, I mean, Biden has airdropped this stuff to them, which of course is immediately captured by Hamas. None of it goes to the population.
Yeah. Right.
None of it goes to the population.
It's
all taken by Hamas. And if Hamas dines to distribute some of it to the population, They do it by selling it. They don't give it away.
I want people also to remember that before October 7th, the relationship with the Biden administration and our duly democratically elected government was the Biden administration does not like who the Israeli people elected in a democratic election, and they were trying to push out Bibi. We saw that they were telling Bibi that you have to do this if you want the United States to help push the Abraham Accords with Saudi Arabia through. And they were twisting his arm, and we see that also just was maybe less than a month ago that Gantz, who is the head of the opposition here in Israel, was invited to the United States against the desire of Prime Minister Netanyahu. And they had official talks there, lower level official talks with Gantz. And this sounds like they're trying to groom him to take over for Netanyahu. And after he returns, what happens? All of a sudden, Chuck Schumer gets up and says, Israel needs to go to new elections. And who is he?
It's more than that, Tamar. Just this morning, I saw a video with Yoram Hazoni. Yoram Hazoni is the world's number one expert, number one philosopher of what's called the new conservatism. He's very well known throughout the world. And he was talking about Israel already being in the throes of a so-called color revolution, already now. Active, not talking about, but active color revolution. We're seeing it on the streets of Tel Aviv, where these activists that, again, are promoted by the journalists around the world. Suddenly, journalists report 100,000 people were demonstrating, when the actual numbers were a few hundred, not 100,000, but a few hundred. And they're demonstrating violently, and we know that they're being paid by someone. We cannot put our finger exactly on who exactly is paying them. But this is funded. We know that it is funded.
And we know that the Biden administration does not like Netanyahu or our democratically elected government, and they are trying to call the shots and telling us that we need to go to new elections. You know, democracy is you're in for 4 years. If you don't like the results, you wait your 4 years, and then you have elections. And this interference in Israeli domestic policy is what I would term as chutzpah, as they say in English. And listen to this article that just came out. This is from JNS.org. Amid anti-Netanyahu protests, Yair Lapid, who is also in the opposition, or he's actually the head of the opposition because Gantz kind of like went in with Netanyahu right now. But Yair Lapid is to meet with Anthony Blinken and Chuck Schumer in Washington. It says, before departing, the opposition leader blamed Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu for the, quote, collapse of relations with Israel, Israel-U.S. relations. So
I just want to say,
they brought in Gantz, called him to Washington. Now they're taking the opposition leader, Yair Lapid, and bringing him to Washington. And then they're going to start calling that Israel needs to go to new elections, which the left here in Israel is already calling for in their Saturday night demonstrations, etc. And this is an invasion into our democratically elected government, what the people of Israel chose.
But in the end, the joke is on them because they're too stupid to know what they're doing in this so-called maladministration that they have. Because every actual survey that's taken, not the survey taken by the American State Department, but every actual survey taken shows that more than 75% of the population of Israel supports the existing government. More than 75%.
And more than 90% do not want to see a Palestinian state. And that's exactly what Biden has tried to push.
Of course.
And people need to realize.
So that's the joke is on them, because if they do go to new elections, the government will be farther to the right and much stronger.
They're
too stupid to know what they're doing. They just talk.
I want our listeners to also understand that if Israel is not able to defeat the Hamas, and if, God forbid, it would ever happen, I don't think it will, but if it would ever happen that they would really be awarded with a state of their own from the massacres and the tortures that their crimes against humanity that they did, this is going to be a green light for all the other enemies of the United States and Western society and decent people everywhere. It's going to embolden them, saying, oh, that strategy works. Let's go in and start mutilating people, burning people alive, taking their children, kidnapping, bombing, murdering, etc.
Don't pass over the fact that these poor hostages, those that are still alive, are still being tortured every day.
Yeah, and I just saw an article today. I didn't want to read it, about a girl who was talking about how she was forced to commit sexual things at gunpoint. I just didn't want to read it. So to say this, also just to finish up with this, that not only is it going to be sending the wrong signal to the terrorists and the evil people of the world that you can get your way if you use this strategy. Remember also, those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. That's not what I say. That's what the Bible says, what God says. And it would be good for America to bless
Israel.
Obama
created ISIS. Trump destroyed ISIS. Biden is bringing ISIS back.
Well, we appreciate the American people, and we hope that they will be able to see through what the Biden administration is doing, and they will continue to take Israel's side, because it's actually their side. We're just the canary in the coal mine, and they should take our side, because it's the right side, it's the just side, it's the moral side, it's the ethical side. It's just the good side, the side of good against evil. And you'll be blessed. Those who bless Israel will be blessed. And if you don't, God forbid. That's all I can say. That's what the Bible says, not what I say. All right.
I told you the standard joke now about that, right?
Tell our listeners, and then we can...
We have, of course, everybody knows, we have as our leader, Bibi, right? And America has as their leaders, B and B, Biden and Blinken. So there's BB and there's B and B.
Very cute.
Take your choice.
Very cute. All right, everybody, you've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And I hope that you have gained something from this show. Again, if anybody wants to support us, we could use your support. You can go to our webpage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com and click on our button that says donate or partner with us, and you can donate to the station. And we need to buy another computer. You want to help us with that, we'd be very appreciative. And with general costs of the station to run it, so we can bring you English radio from Israel. Thank you for being with us, and thank you.
And unfortunately, my computer is also Windows 7.
Okay. There you go. And thank you, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, and thank you, listeners. You've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here on Israel News Talk Radio.